Hello and welcome to the next episode of In Conversation With. My name is Robert Tansley, partner at Cambridge Innovation Capital. Earlier this year, the liquid biopsy company Inivata, a spin-out from the CRUK Cambridge Institute, was acquired by NeoGenomics in a deal which valued it at just over $400 million. I'm very pleased this morning to welcome Dr. Clive Morris, former CEO and now president of Inivata, a subsidiary of NeoGenomics, to talk us through this journey. I suppose the first question is what was the background to NeoGenomics acquiring Inivata?
So even though the deal was eventually struck this year, the history goes back well over a year, sort of probably 18 months prior to that. So we were at a stage in the company where we were raising funds to commercialize our first product and also to develop our second product. And at the time, we struck a deal with NeoGenomics, where they would become a commercial partner for the US market. Alongside that, they made an equity investment. And as part of that, they also had an option to buy the company. And then over the ensuing 12 to 18 months, they were commercializing the first product, got to know us, and that culminated then in the acquisition in 2021.
And it was the value of the company was over $400 million mm-hmm. from a startup, an academic startup, through to that over a period of 6 or 7 years, seen as a good outcome. But is this another example of UK technology being acquired by an overseas company and the main value going with it?
So, the way we look at this is we always believed in the technology had a great potential to help patients. And, we developed that technology, gathered the data and started that commercialization journey. So, we think the value reflects, the value that product can bring to patients. And, we're proud of what we did to bring that forward. However, for the next stage of the company, we needed to be commercializing out across the whole of the US market, and that is a significant investment in its own right, building out hundreds of people, the infrastructure required to do that. And that would have taken a significant incremental investment as part of this. So we look at it that the purchase price was probably reflected of the work done to date, but there's a lot more required to fully bring that product through to market and the ultimate success. And that's what NeoGenomics will now be investing in and driving that growth alongside Inivata.
Now, it'd be great to look into that in a little bit more detail, but maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit about the company, Inivata, and its heritage and its mission when it was set up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's actually a spin-out, as you mentioned, from the University of Cambridge. So it's the labs, the scientific founder, Nitzan Rosenfeld, discovered and was one of the early pioneers in these techniques we call liquid biopsy today. But really, we look at capturing tiny amounts of cancer DNA in the blood. So we can take a simple blood test, and then we can extract and analyze that DNA. And then we use that DNA to do a range of things, from helping to diagnose the type of cancer a patient has, to try and work through which type of therapy they might need, and more recently, are they responding to therapy and have they been cured even by their therapies? So that was a great technology. And the founding of the company was based on the belief that that was going to be the most sensitive, the most specific sort of test for cancer DNA. And, really we were, focused on how do we transform the lives of patients. That was the vision we had for the company. We started off, the first product was in lung cancer and trying to diagnose which subtypes of lung cancer people had. And as we were starting to commercialize that first product, we sort of, realized there was a great potential in another setting, in early stage cancer. And we developed a follow-up product that was specifically looking for evidence of residual disease after therapy of curative intent. So when patients have their surgery or radiotherapy or other treatments for cancer, one of the big questions is, are these patients cured? And we know if we find those evidence of the DNA in the blood, then we know that patient's not been cured. We know that they will recur unless they're treated, and therefore that patient needs more therapy.
Oh, it'd be good to explore some of those aspects. I must say, I first met Nitzan after instruction from our friend Rob Woodman, who led the seed round. And in those early days, I remember meeting Nitzan saying this is going to revolutionise the management of cancer. And unlike most kind of statements of that kind, this wasn't probably hyperbole. I think it really is revolutionising the management and the amount of information available to personalised treatment. So it has fulfilled that kind of vision that Nitzan has. So Rob obviously was led, and CIC came in at the seed round of 1.5 million raised in 2014, and the company grew quite rapidly, and then obviously raised a really quite reasonable Series A of 31 million in early 2016. And at that time, we brought some fairly large investors in, yep, who had the vision to build big companies, and as well as one or two others at that time. But then shortly after that raise, which we thought was quite a large Series A of $31 million, the main competitor in this field, a US company, Guardant Health, announced a $360 million Series A, which included SoftBank, and really kind of changed the scene as far as how much investment is required. What was your view with respect to the capital requirements in this field?
No, it's a good question, and you're right. And you know, that Series A round, I think, you know, was a very, you know, sizable round for a sort of a diagnostics company based in the UK as a Series A. So, you know, it was a, you know, a significant amount of money to raise. But I think that reflected the potential for the type of technology and the type of products that we were developing and the excitement around the area. And I think, as you mentioned, sort of those investors in that you know, in that round were clearly sort of, you know, taken by that vision. Quite rightly, I think what we're now starting to see is that vision is turning into reality. So it was correct, you know, sort of at the time it was hope and, you know, belief it was going to happen, but now we are treating patients. Patients are benefiting from this, so that vision is turning into reality. But it's that attractiveness has also meant there's a lot of competition out there, and I think that just reflects some of the scale of when you need to develop the evidence, the clinical trials that you need to be developing to get all the way through the regulatory reimbursement hurdles, and then to scale out a commercial infrastructure. You know, sort of takes hundreds of people. And that takes significant investment over many, many, many years. You know, Guardant's now been going about 10 years. I think there is having a very key eye on, you know, the market, the unmet need that you're trying to address with the product, and really where the differential is and how strong that is. And then it's actually being able to then sort of have a, you know, a sufficiently large vision to attract that capital and then being able to execute on it. And, you know, I think it's certainly one that as the rounds get larger, they get harder to raise. And certainly as the competition gets further ahead and raises more, in some ways, you know, the positive data sort of, you know, raises sort of the profile of the area, but it also makes the differential question more important of how are we going to compete with this company? What would we do? And that was, you know, in part behind as we looked at the first product we had, which is being commercialized, is a great product, but directly competes with the Guardant product. But the follow-up product we have doesn't compete directly with that Guardant product that's there. And actually the degree of differential there is even higher than we had with our first product. And we're seeing great traction with that.
And I just wonder what your lessons from that as a UK company, particularly in the field of diagnostics, which has not necessarily attracted that sort of funding. What was your experience of trying to raise money in that environment?
I think sort of certainly what we found was, you know, sort of investors who could invest in the early stage rounds in the UK. But actually, as we get into the bigger rounds, then actually a lot of this is, you know, is overseas capital. You know, there is a gap, I think, between the sort of true venture and then perhaps the more sort of mature company, public equity, sort of, you know, public company type of investors. But actually bridging that gap to actually build the scale to get that commercial success is actually sort of a key part. And, you know, my sense is a lot of the capital for those, you know, those types of investments reside overseas, particularly in the US. And I think for diagnostics, you know, for a company like Inivata, the initial market is the US. It's the most mature of the markets for this type of technology and product.
And what's driving that? To be honest, you know, we're still not seeing liquid biopsy widely used in Europe, whereas in the US, the traction and its use, and it has its place within the care of patients with cancer.
I think probably it's a general, you know, generalizable piece around the approach to paying for innovation and sort of, you know, in the life science sector, in healthcare, you know, in terms of whether it's therapeutics or these diagnostics of, you know, sort of the commercialization is just the willingness to pay for that innovation and the improvement in outcomes is greater. And also, it is a more homogenous market. You know, Europe is, you know, we think of it as one country, but actually it's not. It's many, many countries, and even individual countries are highly fragmented. So it's actually quite difficult to access that market. And while you can access parts of it, it's actually sort of, you know, in the US you can get reimbursement for the company country as a whole, and, you know, clearly then start thinking of commercialization. So I think when you put those, the willingness to pay, the access to the market, and actually, you know, some innovative routes in terms of the route we took to reimbursement wasn't just through the standard sort of FDA approval. There is a separate path for tests like our own that you can get reimbursement. So you know, even as a smallish UK-based company, we were able to gain reimbursement for our product and then start that commercialization journey. So,
And during this period when trying to raise that significant amount of money to be a competitive, there were obviously struggles. Can you tell us, you know, what was it that Inivata was able to do to survive that period where actually there wasn't as much capital available as you know, the board and the company felt was necessary?
So, you know, clearly as part of any fundraise, you know, the business plan, sort of the spending plan sort of, you know, needed to be put together. Sort of, you know, so we operated to those, and of course, you know, we titrated our spending. So the difficulty, of course, is you want to grow as quickly as you can, which usually means that you're spending sort of at a faster and faster rate. But of course, you need to be able to raise the capital and reach the inflection points to raise the next amount of capital before, you know, sort of you clearly spend all the money that's been raised. So there's always a sort of it's like driving a car with a foot on the accelerator and the brake at the same time of how fast can we go, but not too fast, and titrating that. And I remember when I took on the CEO role, sort of they said there's two full-time jobs, it's fundraising and running the company. So, and it's very true that, you know, straight away from closing the first fundraising round, it's actually straight into the next one of getting ready for that and building the track record and the relationships with the investors. And when it comes to then talking to investors around, you know, clearly every company believes in their own products and their technology, but actually having a stable of other people who've, you know, put money or put their reputation behind it as well, I think is very useful. And I think that's what we saw sort of early on when we were trying to raise some of those rounds. We perhaps didn't have that commercial traction that would have been useful. And as we pivoted and bought on the second product and did the partnership with NeoGenomics, that bought that third party validation for the commercialization. And then the next product we had coming through, as we think through towards the you know, working with biopharma companies and others, suddenly we had a sort of a portfolio of third-party validation around the products and technologies. And then I think the sort of the fundraising then opened up to the sense of, okay, now this is starting to look real, it's been de-risked, there's obvious path forwards towards commercialization, and I think was a more attractive proposition then for investors.
And you know, just reflecting on Inivata's journey and where it's ended up, I think we had the opportunity to work alongside NeoGenomics for a year. It was a courtship before they actually acquired the company after the initial investment. And I suppose their vision of actually making this available to a much wider population, I think, chimed very much with Inivata's vision. So I think in many respects, it was a match made in heaven in order to make sure that Inivata's kind of a unique technology was widely available.
Indeed.
Clive, thank you very much for taking the time. It's been a fascinating story from a great company. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert.